MC.
Yo.
Yo. We're, well, I'm late.
Yeah.
Very late.
Very late, which is a bit out of the ordinary for you. Last time I was late and you were, when you came here and you were freaking out about it, remember?
Mm. The other thing that I noticed is that I was driving here and it was raining again.
Mm.
So there's a common theme.
Well, yeah, but this rain they did predict. So it's not totally out of the ordinary, is it?
No.
I think it's going to piss down.
Well, let's be honest. If it's a Friday or it's a weekday and I'm in here doing a podcast, there's probably a good chance it's going to be raining.
Yeah, yeah. You're not pouring some crete.
Yeah, not pouring crete, brah.
Yeah. But here we are. We're at TNC headquarters.
TNC headquarters and it's quiet.
Yeah, no one's in here yet. They'll probably start coming in at about 8 o'clock.
Is it weird when you get in here and it's so quiet? Because you know what, like, it's like, you know, when you get to, well, not, like, I'm not too sure if you ever played sport or anything, but you get to school, and I used to do football training at like 6:30, and the school was just so quiet. It was kind of eerie.
I was definitely not getting to school early. And I did play sport, but not school sport.
Okay.
Just on the weekend.
Okay. Yeah. What do you think of the documentary?
Yeah, well, it was pretty good. So let's explain to the viewers what documentary we're talking about. Danielle Brandon.
Danielle Brandon. Actually, before we do that, we probably should do the intro music and then we'll get into it.
Oh, yeah.
But I've got a couple of little notes before we start. So that was a false start. Apologies. All right. All right,
let's He's go. Known for these.
We get to the point.
Well, welcome to episode 2 of the monthly DM. My co-host on the opposite side of the table, Mr. Matthew MC Clark.
Hello.
Yeah, before we kick off, obviously, I just want to make a couple of notes on. I lost a dear friend to me 3 or 4 weeks ago to suicide, and. Yeah, it was a very, very heavy thing. Obviously, a lot of underlying traumas and, you know, whatever else. But always look out for your friends. I know they always say that. Be diligent, you know, see if there's prescription drugs, see if there's anything else underlining where it's more than just asking a question of, are you okay? Because sometimes it's a lot more than that. And, you know, it was very, very heavy. Even more so at the funeral, it was still just very, very hard for me to comprehend. It felt so surreal. A guy who I love so much, who was so funny. And, yeah, the funeral was very, very light because of the type of person Dan was. Yeah, a massive shout out. With condolences to the whole Leadham family. Yeah, obviously it was a very, very, very tough time, still a tough time, and probably going to be for the rest of everyone's life. But, yeah, look, I know people say, you know, look out for your mates and ask them if they're okay, but sometimes it's a lot more than are you just okay. I know everyone's not equipped for it, but, you know, just make sure you look out for your loved ones. So, that, yeah, I just wanted to start on that and dedicate this episode to Daniel Leadham. You know, rest in peace, brother. I love you, and yeah, it's going to be very hard without you here. But yeah, let's kick off this episode, Matthew. I gave you some homework to watch a documentary, and something that I thought you would like from two parts. One, the girl's gorgeous.
Yeah, she is.
He rang me yesterday and said, I want to marry this girl. She's gorgeous. But she had a story which I feel very, very connected to in a lot of ways. And, you know, obviously the two episodes on Clark's Corner that we've done, it's probably the most real and vulnerable I've ever been on a public forum. And I kind of just wanted to, I wanted you to watch it just so you could probably just get a visual understanding of, you know, because you got to, they interviewed Danielle's brother and her mother and stuff like that. And I kind of just wanted to ask from your point of view, man, obviously, like, seeing someone, obviously, you know, as great as she is as an athlete and how she, you know, physically looks, she's, you know, a gorgeous girl and a specimen. But how was it for you watching that and seeing a girl who's come from absolutely nothing and triumphed through the hardest way possible for start of life? How did it affect you?
I think it was interesting. So obviously when you – so her story, for people who don't know, is father was an alcoholic. Mother kicked the father out of the house, so he had no contact with them. And then she ended up becoming an alcoholic slash meth addict later on.
I think and going to all-round drug user. She used heroin, she used meth,
And the mother ended up going to jail, leaving the kids with a, I guess, neglectful or abusive auntie and uncle.
Yeah, emotionally abusive.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to look. I think if you look at the two siblings, they're almost polar opposites.
Polar opposites.
So how she took it is she is this, you know, physically strong, you know, dominating person. And her brother, who's almost the same age, I think there was like 11 months apart.
Yeah, it was very short.
Is a, you know, a small, the complete opposite, not physically imposing at all, lightly spoken. She's quite outspoken and pretty full on, and he's just like this meek.
Yeah, very timid.
Timid guy. I think that's interesting to see how people with the same genetic makeup react to the same situation. The difference, I believe, was is that she had the athletic outlet, and then she also had sort of like an adoptive family that took her in, whereas the brother was kind of left to his own devices and didn't have the athletic outlet. So because the because she was, you know, she had this amazing athletic ability, it opened up more opportunities for her.
Yeah.
Which I think gave her confidence in other areas, whereas he didn't seem to have that to fall back on.
Yeah.
So that was the main thing I noticed, because I'm always thinking about, you know, nature, nurture type stuff. And it doesn't get any – that argument doesn't get any more clear cut when you look at someone with the same genetic makeup and how they react differently to the same environment.
Yeah.
So that's what I found the most interesting thing about it, which is probably not the – like when you watch that, it's probably not the most common thing you think of, but I guess that's what I was thinking of when I was watching it.
Yeah, obviously, the as I said to you, the story felt so connecting to me because it was very similar to mine. You know, multiple times as a kid, seeing my police bus through our door, my dad being locked up, you know, my mum, you know, being done by a security guard, taken to a police station for stealing, you know, while she's cracked out on heroin, while I should have been at school. But going to an, like I had a very narcissistic auntie who, you know, from the outside looking in, looked like she was doing an amazing job with me. But internally it wasn't that at all. So just the whole storyline I've just resonated with so much. And you're right, like, you know, I was pretty lucky to have a sporting outlet. I was lucky to be around good families because of sport. And, you know, I was somewhat, you know, looked after and was able to go to people's houses and just go away for football, footy and stuff like that. Like, yeah, her story just resonated with me. And obviously, you know my story pretty intimately. So it was something that I wanted you to watch just to, I don't know, almost have like a visual perspective, not just me sitting here talking to you, but like, you know, seeing the mum, what she looked like, her, you know, feedback on the situation of her lack of being a mother because of her addiction and, you know, just that storyline. It hit me really hard, and I just, kind of wanted to see what it was like for yourself.
Well, the other thing I thought of as well is like, what's the long-term damage of this, which I'm sure you can answer better, when your parents kind of abandon you in a way that, like, they're there, but they've abandoned you as a guardian, and how to overcome that. I'm assuming you probably never fully do. There's always some sort of void or potential insecurity that comes with that, knowing that the people who brought you into the world chose something else over you. And I guess that I'd ask what your perspective on that is, like how do you deal with that as an adult now? Because it's probably still there somewhat. And I guess it was probably harder before you had your own family, because now you've got some energy to put into that and make sure, you know, it doesn't happen. But I guess what I'm saying is, when you were younger, how did you deal with that? Because I'm sure it's a lot of it's subconscious as well.
Yeah. Look, I had I just relate to her so much. Like, I had this ability to just shut it off and get on with it. And it wasn't till, you know, there was certain situations in life that would come up where you are highly affected by it. I guess for her, she utilized CrossFit and gymnastics and stuff like that. And her, like, she actually lent real far into it, to the point where, you know, she progressed uber quickly, because she was physically gifted. She had this strength in her to be able to switch off and just hurt and go to those deep, dark places. Where for me, I think I was a bit more emotionally vulnerable, where, you know, I started to use drugs and alcohol as an escapism and almost become everything that I didn't like, which is kind of crazy. But you're right in the sense that there is still that little 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 8-year-old, 4-year-old, 3-year-old little boy inside of me that does get affected by certain things. It's very hard for me to watch anything on social media or TV or anything like that about child abuse, abduction, neglect. It really, really, really affects me, like, big time. And I just can't watch it. It almost makes me ill. It's still a, you know, I'm 40 this year. We talk about me being 40 this year. Like, it's still a work in progress of me, like, being present in who I am now and making sure that the little guy inside me knows he's all right and he's protected. But that's a work in progress daily.
Yeah, and it probably will never be fully rectified, because it's – I mean, we are kind of products of the child that we were. A lot of our adult behavior is in response to, you know, how we felt or how we dealt with our childhood, I believe. Mm. You know, you can see it's so obvious in some people and then not so obvious in other people, but you can see, we'll just use you as an example. So obviously you lacked any sort of concrete paternal figure that was constant in your life. And now, you know, you're now the most important thing to you, and you express this pretty much every day, is your daughter now. You know what I mean?
Well, it was the reason why I was late.
Yeah.
And I was trying to walk down the stairs and she's like, daddy, kiss. And do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to say no to my child because of a hand on my watch, you know what I mean? Like, I'll run back up those stairs and give her a kiss 100 times over. You know, nothing else matters to me but her.
Yeah. And, you know, someone who didn't come from your upbringing, you know, they're still going to love their children, and it's probably going to be the focal point of their life, but they're probably less aware or vocal about it than someone like you, who is obviously not trying to rectify the past, but trying to break the cycle of the past.
Yeah, which is quite crazy, because I had a I had a conversation with Luce. I just had some like spiritual healing done, and you know, I seem to attract broken people. People that, you know, have gone through bad phases in life, or they're at a bad phase. Like I seem to draw these attention, draw these people to me. And even though I'm still trying to fix myself, I become this fixer because I have this deep empathy for people who were struggling, because I knew what it felt like to be that kid struggling, that teenager struggling, and having no one to come and save me. So it's almost like this thing that's ingrained in me that I have to save and help people when I'm still going on that journey myself. And it's something that I'm slowly learning to now put space and time and barriers up to protect myself, for my energy and for myself, for me, and also for my family, because, you know, like, it's not my duty. I'm not God. And I'm, you know, it's been really hard because that's my natural instinct, because I have this deep empathy of knowing what that feels like, even though they're not going through what I went through. But it's just, you're almost trying to save yourself in this other people.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about now you're creating space and all that, it's not that you probably attracted those people. It's probably more that you, once you identified them, you put energy into them. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, you probably attracted a lot of people that weren't broken or that, but you put more energy into the broken people because you have that level of, you can relate to where they're at. Mm. So you went out of your way for those people, which isn't a bad thing. I think probably you get more fulfillment in life doing things for others than you ever will for yourself.
100%.
So I don't think it's the worst thing, but you just got to figure out who are those others that you're going to help, because you can't help everyone.
Yeah.
So for you, you feel like you need to make that space because you want to put more time, effort into the people in your circle than just some person that seems to be struggling that you know of.
So. Yeah, to a degree. Obviously, I tend to build, you know, quite strong bonds with people, and it's right. It's like, you know, my wife, you know, she's a lawyer, she's a mum. We're looking to be, you know, to do parenting again. And like, you know, when you haven't got energy because you put it external to your family group, then it's hard to give anything to your own partner and your wife and your best friend. Like, that's when it becomes a detriment to you and to the people inside your circle, like especially your family. I think that's when, you know, you get those moments where you're like, okay, I need to put some space and time into this, where I never knew how to do that. I kept going until I got the desired result, and it just come at the detriment of myself and everyone else around me.
Yeah, it's like they say, you got to fill your own cup first before you can fill others. So you can't, you know, you can't be Mother Teresa kind of thing. Well, you can, but I mean, I'm sure Mother Teresa had a, you know,
I'm sure she gave out some ass whoopings.
Yeah, and I'm sure it was at the detriment. A lot of what she did was at the detriment of herself. And I can only assume that she doesn't regret it or anything, but she's obviously a very rare case. That's why we both know who Mother Teresa is.
She's so a 1%.
It's probably, 1%. Yeah, yeah, it's not for everyone. That type of lifestyle isn't for everyone, you know. As humans, we still have that in us where, you know, we're the most important thing in our own life, and that is then put onto those around us because,
yeah. Well, just to kind of wrap that up, it's called DBE, Daniel Brandon Energy, made by RAD Productions. Get around it. But on a positive note, like, it was cool this morning. I got up, had a coffee, read my NA book. I'm like, okay, I've got 20 minutes. I'm going to go do a 15-minute EMOM workout downstairs. And, you know, I was like, okay, I need to do at least 10 minutes of stretching kind of every day. You know, I'm feeling better now that I'm stretching, feeling less tight and tense, and it's actually helping my jiu-jitsu. So, and it was cool because I sent a video of myself stretching to you, and within 5 seconds I get a photo back of you at the gym. I'm like, that's fucking winning. Like, you know, like they're the people you want to have. Like, that fired me up, you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah. Fuck yeah. Like, I know Clark's getting after it too.
I mean, yeah, I ain't sleeping.
Yeah. Which is cool. Like, you know, I knew we were doing this podcast this morning, and, you know, I didn't want to have to stress about training or anything later, but I wanted to come here firing, you know what I mean? Even though we started on a bit of a downturn with obviously the introduction and just that story with Danielle Brennan and how it relates to me. But yeah, it's fucking cool to get that photo back from you, knowing that you're getting after it as well.
Yeah, I'm at the point now, I don't let myself off with anything really. Like, we decided to do this podcast, but I'm not going to not follow my same routine. I've just got to do it now an hour earlier. Kind of thing.
What's a Friday morning for you at the gym?
Today I did legs, shoulders, and abs. So, yeah.
What sort of exercises, rep range, set ranges?
Squats. Did squats. I did hack squats today.
They're brutal.
Yeah. So I did did four sets, probably three working sets, four sets in total. Then I did some hamstring curls. And then I did some Bulgarian split squats, which absolutely suck.
Yeah, they suck. Hamstring curl machine, I'm a bit skeptical about.
You don't like it?
It's not that I don't like it. It's just that with wrestling, you want to be explosive. And if you look at rugby league, you look at the NRL from, say, 2013 back, a lot of hamstring injuries. You look at the NRL from, say, 2013 to now, very minimal hamstring injuries. Why?
I don't know.
Because when Trent Robson took over the Roosters, he went downstairs to the gym and every single pin-loaded piece of equipment he threw in the bin, and he changed their whole training structure to functional stuff. The reason why that machine is good for a bodybuilder is because it builds volume through your hamstring. The reason it's bad for an athlete like yourself is that femur is the longest bone in your body. That hamstring shortens, and when you try and be when you're being explosive, and this is me repeating something from a top level NRLS&C coach, is that you've got this power, but it shortens so much from that machine that when you explode and you're at full extension, because of how long your femur is versus how contracted and shortened that hamstring becomes, that's where the hamstring injuries used to come all the time.
Well, I don't know, but the only pushback I would have on that, the differentiating factor between NRL and jiu-jitsu is, in jiu-jitsu we do spend quite a long time with our hamstring contracted.
It's true.
So putting our heel to our ass, kind of thing. There's a lot of submissions, there's a lot of positions where that's the motion that's happening. You know, let's take a triangle for example. I'm going to have to contract. I'm going to have to put myself in pretty much that position at some point, like a hamstring contraction to get the position. So that's my pushback on that. I don't know. Probably there's someone out there more qualified to talk about this than me.
I guess to find something that's at a similar thing to get that result would be back extensions or Nordics, which is going to give you time under tension through that movement, but it's functional.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's,
or a Romanian deadlift or something like that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But look, as you said, like now, like thinking about it, like, you know, if you're playing a Z guard or something like that, you know, you're that 90 degree bend in your leg is
you're spending time there. Yeah. So whereas NRL, it's all pushing. So I can see why the hamstring probably isn't as important, because they're pushing the whole time. So,
well, that the ability for the leg to extend out completely with stride is going to give that more chance of tearing. I was just thinking with wrestling, but even wrestling, you're kind of almost in like a squatted position.
Yeah, very rarely are you pushing off for an extended period of time as fast as hard as you can in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, valid point. I'll take that.
Yeah, but I mean, someone can come on and probably tell us. I don't know anything. So in this regard, don't listen to me.
We'll try and get Sam Kennedy in from the. He's from the Knights. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Kenno's a bit of a beast. But yeah, man, it's as I said, it was just really, really cool. You know, I've had my coffee, read my book, got my workout in. You know, stretching for me is probably like, what does Rogan call it? Like, yoga's like jiu-jitsu against yourself. Like, bro, I go through some pretty rough battles. Like, I sit there and I'm stretching. I'm like breathing into this and I'm like, fuck, this hurts. And I'm just sitting here doing nothing.
Yeah, well, it's also pretty boring too, which I think is the the killer.
Well, I've got to do it as an EMOM. Like, I've got to put like 10 minutes on and go, right, a minute. Like, I'll choose, you know, five things or three things or whatever, two things, and, you know, hold it for a minute at a time and know that you're going to be swapping in a minute.
Yeah. It's funny. You know, you can – a lot of people, they'll do these insane workouts and, you know, they'll be like some high-level athlete, but they can't stretch for like 1 minute. It just kills them, which I find funny. But that's just human nature, isn't it? We don't like to be uncomfortable, but under our own terms.
Yeah. Which is, you know, kind of from David Goggins' first book, even though his traumatic childhood, and I could, you know, not relate to it because it was, you know, he went through fucking hell. The biggest thing that I took away from what's the book called?
Can't Hurt Me.
Is the 2 hours of stretching he does every night. And it was something that always rang in my head. And like, I think now that I'm like going, well, dude, you're about to be 40. You probably need to start stretching more.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's an extreme case. So he didn't do anything half. There was no half measures. There was no building up for him. He went from never running to running 100 kilometers. And it's not the smartest way to go about it because he dealt with catastrophic injuries and he's almost crippled now. So
what about the workout he did the day before with his sergeant or whatever it was? And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
He's like, what are you, a pussy? Like, fucking, let's go. And then you're getting like, what do you got rhabdomyolysis.
Yeah, so well, he's bad. It's not the – longevity-wise, it's not the best thing to do. But I think for him, it was a mentality thing that he had to overcome because he felt like he was so weak that he had to be the absolute opposite of what he was to do what he needed to do. And I think I believe that he thought if he gave himself any leeway, he would take too much. Yeah. So if he gave himself an inch, he would take a mile and revert back. And I think he operated from a place of fear from that. So
yeah, of course.
Which drove him to do crazy stuff like stretch. I think he started stretching. It was 4 hours a night at the beginning. That's or something. Nuts. So.
Well, just even like, you know, my rounds with you over the last couple of weeks where you put some absolute beatings on me. One, like I've gone back to doing some regular bike now because I know I need to retrain myself to nasal breathe because you're like, fuck, bro, you're breathing so heavy out of your mouth. I'm like, I need the bike so I can do nasal breathing and it, you know, because I'm a mouth breather naturally. And then stretching because I'm like, I just feel like I feel like a brick wall. I feel like I can't move.
Yeah, well, your size too, you know, it's going to be hard to be mobile anyway. So
yeah,
you've got to put the extra work in to be mobile.
100%. And, you know, some great rounds and some great feedback, which has given me something to work on. I've even spoken to Lynch about it. So it's really, really cool. But, mate, what's happening in your world? How's the last couple of weeks been?
Yeah, pretty good. So I'm back training, like getting ready for competition. I'm just going to do pretty much every comp this year. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying that. Had some really good rounds. I'm working on my wrestling and passing still, and it's going pretty well. I feel like I'm making pretty quick progress in the areas I'm working on. So along with that, business is going pretty well. We're consistently hitting our targets for the month, for the week. And yeah, that's pretty much it. That's where I'm at. It's going good. What about you?
Yeah, obviously a rough couple of weeks. But just I found this like gratitude in myself that I haven't really, I've always said I'm grateful and blessed and stuff like that, but I don't think I actually really felt it until, you know, obviously the stuff that's happened over the last 4 weeks has really, really impacted on me in a positive way. You know, I do feel so grateful, and I do have a lot of gratitude for everything that's going on in my life. But yeah, I feel like, you know, that was a big lesson for me to reflect on. Doing those hard rounds with you in the mornings has really exposed the vulnerability to me, where I'm like, okay, these are the little things that you need to be doing to be competitive with Clarkie. Like, you know, like that's a real good test, you know, putting yourself up against the guy. Like, and not just once. Like, this is how stupid my fucking ego is. I went back another 3 or 4 times.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I was very sore after that. But it's a lot of it's a large load to move, Dallas. Like, you, I think you, what are you, 40 kilos heavier than me? So it's fucking, it's not, it's rough for me too, if it makes you feel any better.
Yeah, well, it's just, I don't know, like, as I said, you know, getting the message from you this morning back, you know, that you're at the gym getting after it, and I don't know, like, I feel very grateful even just for our relationship, you know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, being able to do this, and you're keeping me honest, man, and that's a cool thing to do, and it's why, you know, obviously business is doing well, why you're feeling like you're progressing leading into these comps on the mats as well, because, you know, there's this winning mentality that you're ingrained with because you're doing all the small things, man, and that's rubbing off onto me, and it's becoming infectious, so that's a fucking cool thing.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's what it's all about, that type of stuff. Like, I think you, as they say, it's so fucking cliche, but you are the person you, like, you are the people you surround yourself with.
Product of your environment, yeah. Reflection of the people you spend time with.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So I'm the same. You know, people rub off on me. If they're doing the right things, I'm more likely to do the right things, yeah. Because I don't want to be the one that's not. Yeah. I don't want to be the one getting left behind, and that's why it's so important to really be selective with who you put your energy and your time into.
I said that in our last pod on the last Clark's Corner.
Yeah.
Was, you know, like, you know, who you procreate with, who you spend time with becomes a direct reflection of how you're going to be. If you're all constantly talking to people who are miserable cunts, you're going to become a miserable cunt.
Yeah.
If you're talking in, you know, if your call log and your call list is fucking winners, and you got people who are constantly pushing the envelope, like, you don't have a choice. You got to fuck on. You got to have a go. And I love that.
Yeah, and it's what I think. Like, every successful person of that, I don't think they're doing it alone. Like, you may only know them, but I'm sure behind the scenes they have people surrounding them. Even the most, you know, lone wolf type of guy you can think of. Let's just take David Goggins. We'll go back there again.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he has people in his life, even though he comes across as this lone man. But I'm sure there's people in his life that he associates with that push him as well.
Yeah.
They could be even his competitors when he does these huge races, these 100-mile races.
Yeah.
I've seen videos where his wife is driving next to him, you know, at 4 in the morning while he's running. Like, even he who has so much intrinsic motivation still surrounds himself with people.
Well, I think him and Cam Haynes are pretty similar. And, like, you know, through Rogan, obviously those guys have connected. You know, Cam was working a 9-to-5 and would run half a marathon, you know, bit of it before work and then at his lunch break and then after work.
Yeah.
And then obviously the bow hunting and stuff, like the bow, you know, the arrow shooting and stuff like that. But I watched a little doco on Jocko Willink.
Yeah, yeah. And I've read one of his books.
Yeah, I've read Extreme Ownership.
I read is that a dichotomy of leadership? Is it?
Yeah.
Is it like the
it's
same?
The one, it's the yeah. one with Leif Baden, him and Leif
Baden. It's like a white and black.
White and black book, yeah.
Yeah, I've read that, yeah.
And even him, bro, like, you know, even though, like, all those SEAL guys, they look up to him and, you know, like how they implemented, you know, extreme ownership from, you know, the SEAL teams into, you know, the stuff they're doing with corporations and business and stuff like that. But, like, you know, you look at Echo Charlie, you look at Leif Babham, you look at all those guys who, you know, Dean Lister's a massive part of, you know, Jocko and who he is. Like, and this is a guy that you kind of put on a pedestal as a one percenter. But, you know, there's guys around him that obviously make him great as an individual as well. You know, they're not getting him out of bed at 4:30 every morning to go work out in the dark. That's him. He just does that. But then there's, you know, obviously other people around him, like for jiu-jitsu, it's, you know, Dean Lister or his business partner with Origin. You know, like just a really, really cool guy. I'm a really big fan of Jocko Willing.
Yeah. And I think on the flip side of that, if you are trying to be an extraordinary individual, you know, on the flip side, it can be quite lonely because, you know, we've got examples of those people in those people's lives, but they're probably few and far between.
Mm.
You know, if you just want to live a normal lifestyle, you can find hundreds of people to relate to and get close to and that type of stuff because, you know, that's why it's the average lifestyle, you know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
But if you're trying to do, you know, extraordinary things, you probably are going to be lonely a lot of the time because there's just not that many people. And it doesn't mean that if you are trying to be something extraordinary, you got to, like, you know, tell everyone to get fucked because they're not on your level or something like that. But it does I can imagine it's probably harder to connect on a deeper level with, you know, some people.
One thing I struggle with, and I was chatting with Luce about this last night, is like if I don't have that emotional connection with someone, it's very hard for me to have small talk. Like I just can't have small talk with people unless I have like that connection with them and I respect them. And yeah, I'm like, I asked her, I'm like, is that something I should work on, or do you think that's a characteristic that's benefiting me, or is it at a detriment to me? And she said, I think it's actually a benefit because you're not one to just fuck around. Like if you're going to talk to someone, there's emotion, there's heart, there's substance behind it.
I will push back on that slightly. I think where it can be a detriment is that if you close yourself off to small talk at the beginning, you might be closing yourself off to potentially connecting with some people because not everyone's the best communicator and not everyone's willing to open up straight away. So what you perceive as small talk with someone you don't connect with, down the line, once you get to know that person more, you could actually find this is a person who I connect with greatly. It's just that they didn't have the communicative skills in the beginning, or they don't feel comfortable expressing themselves fully in the beginning to have that connection. It's someone that you got to warm up to, kind of thing. Yeah. I think you're probably leading yourself to only connect with other extroverts.
Well, I'm actually an introvert. I'm not an extrovert. That's a
well.
That's a character that I play to protect myself still, because yeah. I'm very, very introverted. I like my own time. It's more so with people probably already established in my life,
yeah,
that I feel like when they don't hit a certain marker or an expectation of life that I'm trying to achieve, it's very easy for me to remove myself emotionally, and I can't just have small talk. Like if I don't have that connection with you anymore because I don't respect you, then I just can't. I can't just pick. Like, hey, mate. Yep. How's it going? Yep. Cool. Sweet. I can't. I shut off completely emotionally.
Yeah. And it's probably not going to hinder you like that. I mean, you're a middle-aged dude with a family and that. Like, you don't need to waste energy with everyone.
I think it's come from like how I've emotionally been able to shut myself off from my parents.
Yeah.
Like when you. Like that's the pinnacle, right? If you can remove yourself emotionally from those two people, everyone else is kind of like it's pretty simple. But I was asking her, like, you know, is this something that I need to work through? Like, do I still need to be a bit more emotional, like, or try and work on this thing because it could be a detriment to me? And she's like, I don't think so. Like, I think you just know when bullshit's bullshit and you just fucking can't stand for it.
Yeah, and I guess in your life you probably don't need that skill. In my world, I've got to be able to communicate effectively with anyone.
Well, that's exactly like I was going to say. Flip side, for you on a daily basis, always interacting with, you know, obviously you've got a database, but you interact with probably a lot of new people on a daily basis.
Yeah.
How do you, obviously there's a purpose. So do you play a character as Matt Clark, as representing Thompson and Clark, or is there still like a lot of genuineness about you with your interaction with these people?
Well, obviously I try to be genuine. However, when you're dealing with so many different people and different personalities and all that, and at the end of the day I'm providing a service, I do have to tailor my communication to the particular person. You know, I can't speak to a – I'll just use home buyer as an example. I can't speak to a home buyer, first home buyer in their mid-20s, a young couple. I can't speak to them the same way I would speak to a 40-year-old business owner who's buying his 10th investment property.
Yeah.
So the service has to be tailored to suit the client.
Question again, is that something that you've built along the journey, or did that come pretty naturally to you on being able to analyze a situation?
It came pretty naturally to me. I think probably just throughout life, like I'm not extroverted at all. Like I don't go out of my way to speak to anyone really. But I feel like I've always been able to communicate with anyone or find common ground with anyone throughout life. And I think it's just because of the upbringing I had and the exposure I had to so many different people. And just like,
can you elaborate a bit on that?
Well, you know, I came from a loving home with two dedicated parents. So I didn't suffer some of the same traumas that you suffer. So I was constantly around positive people or role models, which allowed me to be comfortable expressing myself and communicating with people. Whereas if we go the flip side, I can see how an upbringing like yours would make it hard to be comfortable expressing yourself and all that, because you don't have that parental figure to give you that confidence.
Yeah, it's like a base level security.
For sure.
Yeah.
And because I've had that, you know, we weren't a very large family. There was five of us. Five of us in the family, and then my nan, and the rest live in another country. So very tight-knit group, but very close. And I think that as a child probably gave me confidence just to communicate effectively and be comfortable with myself.
Do you think also with obviously Ryan leaving at a young age to go pursue his soccer career, and are you the next after Ryan?
I'm the youngest by far. So.
Oh, okay.
My sister's 10 years older than me and my brother's 7 years older than me.
Okay. So you're the baby.
So my sister also left around that same time. So my brother was going to Italy when he was like 16. My sister had left she just was ready to move out. So yeah, I did spend an extensive part of childhood almost as an only child. Really. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool though. I like that. Yeah, because you definitely have an ability to like you feel comfortable speaking to you.
Yeah, well, I try to be. Like, you know, I think it comes from professionally and then also just on the flip side. Like, I just like it. I'm happy to talk to people about anything really.
Yeah.
Like That's literally why I do the podcast and stuff. I just like chatting to people. It's not like I'm not the loudest person or the, you know, a lot of times you wouldn't even know I'm in the room, but like if I get someone one-on-one, like I could talk to them for hours about anything. So
yeah, it's pretty crazy. And yeah, obviously back to Clark's Corner, great episode with Grayso.
Yeah.
Great episode with Grayso.
I've had a lot of good feedback from that. So. Yeah.
He's just such a knowledgeable guy. And obviously you guys have a really good connection, which made the flow of the pod really, really good. And I just really enjoyed it. I got to the end of it and I was like, fuck, that was a really good podcast. And I messaged both of you, so.
Yeah, well, the thing about Grayso is he's very opinionated, very, as you said, knowledgeable. And he doesn't really hold back on saying what he feels. So I think the goal for me was to get him to express his opinions, but also keep it on track that not to, you know, disrespect anyone or anything like that. And I think he did it pretty well. That he's everything, all the points he made and that he backed up with.
Facts
or anecdotes that supported his belief. So even if you disagree with him, if you disagree with his main point, you can at least understand why he's said that, you know.
Well, the latest clip was sensational on the demotion of a black belt if you're not staying.
Yeah. And
staying on trend and staying current with jiu-jitsu, which is I found it comical, but two, in a sense where, I do agree to a certain point. Like, I guess if you look at any area of life, right, you have to upskill it sometime. I'm sure your agents here, like, what is it, yearly they have to accumulate points, or is it like?
Yeah, so you got these things called CPD points, and then you got licensing and all that type of stuff. But yeah, I think the point he was trying to get across is that he doesn't want people to get their black belt and then that's the end of your journey. Like you just ride off into the sunset. You're a black belt now. You never learn anything more. You never try and, you know, update your knowledge base as things progress. You know, you're a black belt and that's it. And now, you know, you should have this aura or respect even though you're not putting in the effort and time to learn. And you do see that. Like there's a lot of...
But don't most black belts in jiu-jitsu say the journey begins at black belt? Like,
yeah, but a lot of the sayings in jiu-jitsu are a load of shit. So, I mean, the whole leave your ego at the door. A lot of the people who... like are the most hard-headed about these slogans and that don't follow them themselves. No. Like the people who I've seen say leave your ego at the door, in my experience, are usually the people who have the largest ego. And if you damage that, they come after you the hardest.
Yeah.
It's like a
little friend here in the blue gi. Nick Marquardt, you're here with us today. That's an Eagle special. Shout out to Eagle. He loves that.
But like how many – we all know someone who proclaims the jiu-jitsu lifestyle, but as soon as they are threatened, it may be technically or – you know, a lower belt is getting the upper hand on them, they flip out or say that that guy's being disrespectful and that. So is it disrespectful to start beating you? Like, you know what I mean? It's all cool to have all these slogans, these jiu-jitsu slogans and these memes with a lion on them and stuff like that. But I think the people who share that stuff the most are usually overcompensating because they know they're not following.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to mention when you asked me how I was I'm now starting to feel the small effects of renovations onto renovations. My laundry is now in my garage.
Yeah.
My garage is now a storage facility. Yeah. I had tiles delivered yesterday, all the rough in stuff for the plumbing. And I think we're quite lucky in the sense that we've got a pretty big garage.
It's a three car, isn't it?
Yeah. Like it's downstairs and it's out of sight, out of mind sort of thing. The only time I ever get caught out with the renovation thing is like when I, because the ensuite was my bathroom basically. And every time I go to the toilet and open it and it's just, you know, clean sheets.
Yeah.
And then the laundry, like going to take the dogs out the backyard to go to the toilet at night time or something like that. I'm like, fuck, we can't walk through there anymore. But it's, yeah, I don't know. I feel like we're pretty, I feel like I'm getting a false sense of security with renovations because of, I guess, how big our footprint is in our garage and stuff.
Yeah, well, that's it. If you've got a lot of space, if you've got a lot of empty space in general, it probably takes a lot of the load off. I think the hard thing with renovations is you see, you know, the first home buyer who buys a pretty rough three bedder or something, like a really rough small home, and they do it up and unfortunately they don't have anywhere to put anything, and they're usually financially cutting it very fine as well. So they're doing everything
on a budget.
Yeah. I think that's where you see that type of situation really affect the lives of people. But I think you'll be fine because, you know.
Well, we're quite lucky. Obviously, we've got two bathrooms. So we're going to do the ensuite first. And then when that's in working form again, then we'll do the main bathroom and the toilet. So two toilets, two bathrooms. Obviously, the kitchen is going to be the big one, but you know, just quite lucky that the builder that we've got, shout out to Tyrone, like, you know, he's done this and lived through this himself before. So, and because we're quite close family friends, you know, he understands like timing with when the kitchen's going to be installed versus leaving us with a kitchen and stuff like that. But I guess we're quite lucky in the sense that if you've got an air fryer, you're pretty much sweet. You can cook everything in an air fryer.
Yeah, I have heard that. Everyone keeps telling me to get an air fryer because,
mate, the double draw ninja air fryer is sensational. You put your meat in one side, you put your veggies in the other side, and you can have them at different times, different temperatures. It's a pretty good investment, I'm not gonna lie.
Well, mate, I don't even have a microwave at the moment. So about 3 weeks ago my microwave broke, so I just chucked it, and now I just haven't got another. I haven't needed a microwave since, so I haven't used it.
What's a lot of you, like, just say, like, obviously you're a bachelor. Do you do a lot of meal prep? Or
I do zero meal prep.
Zero meal prep. Are you eating a lot of Uber Eats? Are you, well, like, what's a kind of a weekly dinner situation look like for MC?
Well, I'll cook probably like 4 or 5 nights out of the week.
What are we cooking? What's on the rotation?
It's literally just like some form of meat. And then like pasta and rice, and then
greens. Do you cook your rice or do you do microwave rice?
I cook it.
Yeah.
And it'll be like a greens shake, and then like afterwards like a YoPro with some fruit. And then that's what I make for myself.
Yep.
And then the other meals, I get meals here at work, like just those ready-made meals, which I have for breakfast and lunch. And then I'll snack throughout the day, and then I'm cooking just the once.
Yeah.
And then I'll go out to dinner a couple of times a week.
Yeah.
You know, a maid or like on a date or something. What's your
rice
like?
Do you make pretty good rice or is it pretty?
I don't know what's good rice. I just put it in water.
Fluffy, you know, not gluggy or congealed. Like
I don't know. Like when I'm cooking, I really don't give a shit about the taste. Like it's just a means to an end for me just to get the cows in. Like yeah. I'm not that picky at all. Obviously I like
have you got a food. Rice cooker or do you just do it on the stove?
Just do it on the stove.
Okay.
But yeah, when it's just me and I'm just making food for me, I don't give a shit. Like,
mate, I'm telling you, you get this double drawed ninja.
Yeah.
And you do, there's Woolies and Aldi both do like a boneless marinated chicken. There's like a Greek style and there's a mango and chili one. Mate, you chuck that thing in there and just some sweet potato or pumpkin or, you know, homemade chips on the other side and it's sensational. Within like 40 minutes and you only clean these two little things. It's so easy.
Big Reese walking in. He's the first in here. What time are we?
Mate, it is 8:15.
Yeah, the big fella's in here first, leading from the front.
He's an absolute giant of a man.
Yeah, 6'9".
6'9".
Yeah, tallest person I know. it was quite funny, my brother's wedding photos. So the wedding party, we're all a normal size and then Big Reese, just charging, just a foot taller than everyone.
Skyscraper.
But yeah, it's crazy, eh?
What's do you shop at Woolworths? Do you shop at Aldi? Do you go to like a
just Coles, mate?
Coles,
yeah.
Coles at the junction.
No, I go to Market Town. Yeah. I don't know why. I think they rip us off at Coles at the junction.
Okay.
And just assume we're all
rich.
Yeah.
Bastards.
So I go to Market Town.
You feel a bit more at home there. There's a couple of junkies running around, and it's a bit like Maitland, Morissette.
I do honestly like Market Town just for the. I've seen so much stuff there, like so many things there.
That car park.
The car park, the bus stop. The bus stop is insane at Market Town. But I honestly like it. Like I do. I love Market Town. It's my favourite place, like the favourite shopping place.
It's got a lot of vibes to the shopping centre at Morrison. I reckon you'd see a couple of those people around here too, Green Hills.
Yeah, we do. We do get them because we've got a bus stop just outside the office too, and every now and then there's some sort of fiasco going on. There's also a public phone there, and every now and then a person under the influence will come and speak on it. They're not speaking to anyone. They've lost it, and then they start like hammering the phone or
yes.
Yeah, we've seen heaps of stuff out here too.
So the poor public phone's just copping it.
The public phone's been fucked up many times. I've seen the glass out of it before and stuff like that. So,
which probably leads us into the next part.
Oh, are we going to find it? Yeah. All right.
Let's do it. You want to fight me, cunt? That's unlikely. Find me wiping the blood off my Nikes. If you're a fuck up, then don't park beside me. Bust up a window, punch up a fly screen. You want to fight me, cunt? That's unlikely. Find me wiping the blood off my Nikes. If you're a fuck up, then jump up beside me. Bust up a window, punch up a fly screen. Clark. Bloodstained Nikes.
Yes, what a tune.
That's so good.
Yeah, so this segment, we're going to talk about a training story.
Yeah. I'm going to kick this one off.
Yeah, I'd love you to.
I've actually forgot to send you the video. But we had a Friday morning at 10:30 and it was just Sandro coaching, Big Shelly and myself. And I think we did maybe some half guard passing as the technique. Shelly had night shift. He didn't look like he was too into it. And I was kind of in one of those modes where I was like, I just want to roll. And so we got through probably about 15 or 20 minutes of technique and I just kind of looked at Sandra and went,
come on, mate.
let's wrap this up, big guy. And so Sandra puts the clock on. We put some tunes on. And Sandra said to me, watch out for the Uchimata. Watch out, he doesn't throw you.
Yeah.
And I was like, Ronnie, I'm going to see if Big Shelly actually can do this. So we started wrestling. And, I got an overhook. And then he got the underhook. And, mate, we went hip to hip. And before I knew it, I was flying through the air.
He's got some big hips, Sheldon.
Big, big hips. The big boy. The big man. And in the video, I actually start laughing and say yes. But he absolutely fucking dropped me, the big boy. So That's my my Matt story is if you're going to stand up with Big Shelly, if you get hip to hip and he gets any sort of underhook on you, you're going for a ride.
Yeah, well, I saw him do that to Tomcat in the intercomp.
Yeah.
Tomcat went into orbit, mate. This bloke, there, we got this on video too in the group chat. Tomcat, shout out to Tomcat. You're a strange bloke, but love ya. But, mate, you went you got sent into Mars. That was the biggest throw. So, also shout out to the big man, Shelly, coming off night shift, throwing Dallas around.
Throwing Dallas around.
Like you love
absolute,
to see
like
it.
Like an absolute ragdoll. Oh, there it is there, Matthew. I'll actually play it for you, mate. So
is this Tomcat or you getting thrown?
This is me getting thrown.
Oh,
so.
Perfect. Oh, yes. Nice. Yeah, well, Sheldon's the only guy in the gym that's around your weight, really.
Yeah.
So
it was quite funny every time we'd finish around, like you'd kind of look over at Sandra and he'd be like, Jesus Christ, man, I was waiting for someone to break a bone or
something. And Sandra probably doesn't want to roll either of you because he's got subversion coming up. And he's like, fuck this.
No. Sandra's happy to just coach and be professor. My Matt story that I'm going to share is a big shout out to the big man. Shot his shot and put me on my ass big time. Also, Shelly has developed this really, really, really sneaky footlock.
Yeah.
If I play a high knee shield on him, and I want to say that's come from you, MC, because it's very, very tight and similar to yours.
Potentially, yeah. He loves that. I want to see him hit it in comp.
Yeah.
So he has tried a few times, but I think the comp situation's got the better of him, and he's not done it the same way he does it in the gym. So I really want to see Sheldon do some more competition, and I want to see him get his blue belt this year. That'd be
I think Shelly. I think Shelly just needs to back himself a bit more. Maybe he always says to me, look, man, I'm lacking with my nutrition. Obviously, night shifts play a big part with it and whatever else. But if Shelly could just get a little bit of discipline and just a little bit more C-U-N-T into him, wow, he'd be so scary. Because when you do get him and you're like, he's just unstoppable. I saw said to him, like, hip switching when you're passing guard. I'm like, mate, you just need to be heavy. And when he does it, I feel like my body's going to break in half.
Yeah, well, his last competition he did, we did see that come out of him.
Mm.
Like he smoked some people.
Mm. And like, for a big guy, he's actually quite he's quite nimble and he's quite technical when he's confident in himself.
Yeah, well, I was telling him to play a lot of guard because he's got quite flexible hips.
Very similar to Luke Moran.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. He's got the same mobility.
Yeah.
And at that size.
Scary.
Like he can fling a K-guard from nothing, Sheldon, and you just wouldn't expect it. So I think once he gets a bit more technically sound, what he's doing now, like playing guard and stuff, like he's not going to have as much success in the training room doing that. But I think long term it's a better strategy.
100%, because if I look at myself up until maybe 12 months ago, 18 months ago, I didn't have a guard. I was a blue belt with zero guard, which is horrible. But I forced myself to do it where, you know, Sheldon's quite lucky to be mates with yourself, be at a gym like Ronan, where it's like, hey, if you can get this and make this work for you, it's just going to make your playing ability so much better, especially being a bigger guy with a smaller room. It allows you to have more fun roles with the smaller guys.
You're going to technically advance faster because you don't need to wrestle everyone, take them down and squash them.
Yeah.
You can actually get into technical
exchanges.
Because if you're 120 kilos, you know, the other guy's playing bottom, he's not having technical exchanges with you. He's just trying to survive. Yeah. Because just having your weight on him is enough to like – he can't get too much off. Whereas if you're playing bottom and now you're giving the smaller guy the physical advantage because you're on your back, you're just opening yourself up to doing more jiu-jitsu instead of just being a physical endeavor. And because you don't get exposed to the bigger guys as much, your roles with the smaller guys have to be technical exchanges. So then when you verse someone your size, you can then apply it. Because what happens is the big guys squash everyone in the gym, and then when it comes to comp, they're now exposed to someone that's big and they don't have the technical foundation to squash that guy. Because they've relied on physicality the whole 100%.
Time. Yep.
And they verse someone their size and they're like, holy fuck, everything I do doesn't work because I've not refined the technical.
It's a false sense of security.
Yeah.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, like I know I had to build a game to beat Luke Moran, because when we went into that second lockdown and I was just training with the Wombat, obviously you came over and kicked my ass a couple of times, but I trained with Luke majority of the time. And, you know, I really, really like credit Luke for being so patient with me, great feedback, putting himself in, you know, very vulnerable positions to make me a better player, to make his jiu-jitsu better. But I had to develop this game where, like, if I got on top, I didn't want him to get up because it fucking sucked, because he's just so good everywhere. So, you know, developing that crossface and, like, man, that was all him. You know, that was all his guidance. And it worked really well for a long period of time till it kind of didn't, where it was like no one really wants to roll with you because they don't want a broken jaw for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
They know it's just going to be, you know, physically imposing. So you get to a point where you go, no one really wants to roll with you. You're a bit one-dimensional, even though it's worked for this particular person, and you're getting some good success from it. But, you know, it's like, well, you're not really progressing. So you need to put more tools on the tool belt.
Yeah, and I think the key word is, you know, you're talking about worked. What's the goal? That's how you determine if it works or not. Beating everyone in the gym with one thing, I don't think... Even though that does, we'll say it works for you, I don't think it's working because that's not your goal. No. Your goal is to get better at jiu-jitsu. Yeah. Now, beating everyone with one thing may help you, you know, leave the gym thinking you're the fucking man, but it doesn't help the overall overarching reason you're there.
Yeah.
And if no one wants to roll you, well, yeah, what's the point of it? You're not a, you, there's no point being there. And unfortunately, being someone, you know, your size or Sheldon's size, people are already not wanting to roll you just because of...
Fear of injury.
Fear of injury, and just it's not fun for a lot of people to verse someone that's physically much stronger than them, especially if they don't have any... Like, I don't mind it because I like to just challenge myself as much as possible. You know, I enjoy... the physical challenge of someone who's 120 kilos and just trying to overcome that. But for a lot of people who are just not as serious about it and that, they're just there to have a bit of fun in that. They're not gonna, they don't want you to squash them for 5 minutes.
Well, I guess we're kind of lucky in that sense where our room, there is a lot of like-minded people like you. Like Hugo doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Bo doesn't give a fuck. Aiden doesn't give a fuck. You know, Marquardt didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
You know, like, you definitely don't give a fuck. Like, that's – and the big thing, like, even over the last couple of weeks that I, you know, had to re-reflect on myself was I got so sucked into playing your game that I was a massive detriment to myself. You know, you said to me, why are you trying to be fast? Why are you
trying to outspeed me.
You need to slow this down. And that's just, like, my ego of knowing that I hadn't been doing any sort of conditioning. I knew I was definitely undercooked in my fitness, especially on my feet. But yet the ego and competitor in me was just like, no, I'm going to play his game with him and I'm going to try and match it with him, which was just failing miserably.
Yeah, what I identified in our roles when we were wrestling is you were so desperate to get me down and have me on the ground that you were overexerting yourself, so you do nothing and then do this massive explosion. And for me, I knew, okay, you've only got a certain amount of explosions in you before you're tired, so I've just got to not get put down in the first, you know, few minutes, and then I can get you down eventually, not from, you know, wrestling you down or anything, but just from pure exhaustion kind of thing. So I just wait for you to like almost want to be put down because you're so fucking tired.
Yeah, I'm happy to defend for my back.
Yeah, and I get a snap down or something and you're just like, fuck it, I'm going to turtle kind of thing. So, but that's what I was telling you. So instead of trying to just do nothing and then do this massive explosion, if you just keep constant pressure on me, hang your weight off me, eventually I'm going to be more tired than you.
Yeah.
Because you're using your physical advantages now. You're not going to be faster than me no matter what you do just because you're 40 kilos heavier than me.
Yeah.
But you're always going to be stronger.
It's like a cruise ship versus a speedboat.
Yeah, exactly. But you're always going to be stronger and you're always going to be able to use gravity to your advantage.
Which is the exact thing that I did, MC, you know, after we had that chat. I think that was maybe the Thursday morning. I think Friday was the open mat and Big Ross came in and it was the exact thing I did to him. I didn't like try and shoot arm drags or anything. I just heavy collar tied him and just hung off of him.
Yeah.
And just walked around the gym with him and then like by, I think there was like, you know, maybe 3.5 minutes into the round, I could just see how physically exhausted he was. And then I was arm dragging him. And then I shot a single and tripped him. And then I put him on the ground. Then I north-southed him. And it was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like I was like, okay, I know what Clarkie's talking about now. Like, you know, you have to use that advantage to your advantage. And the biggest thing I'm going to do is be able to slow it down, be heavy and hang and just make it, you know, a very, very, very slow grind as opposed to bouncing on my feet,
yeah,
trying to arm drag you, shooting around,
yeah, yeah, and
which I love having that with you. Like I love
the fact fun.
That we get to go like a couple of gorillas.
Yeah, it's fun. I get thrown in the wall a few times,
but at the same time, it comes back to what you said before. What's the objective? What's the goal? Is the goal for you to wear yourself out and get fucking smoked by guys 40 kilos less than you, or are you actually going to take the feedback from the rounds, take the feedback from your training partner and be better, so then you giving him a better round as well and also becoming a better jiu-jitsu player for yourself?
Yeah, I think you want to develop, you want to have attributes, but you want to develop the technical know-how to actually use and implement those attributes.
Yeah.
So your attributes are your big, strong, you are explosive as well, and fast for your size, but you can't use those attributes to the full potential without the technicality to back it up. You know, Sapo's a great example. I mean, Sapo's a physical specimen, but he's also got the technical know-how to actually use it. You know, there's a lot of big guys out there. There's a lot of big, strong guys that aren't doing as well as him, because they're relying on the attributes too much.
Yeah.
And that's where the balancing effect, you know, and I mean, people say that jiu-jitsu is not about strength and all that. It's a load of shit. It is. But I think what they're getting at is as well, like the overarching concept of it is that you want technical ability as well. And then
take for instance like Bong, right? So Bong is probably on the lighter side like of everyone in the gym.
Yeah.
But Bong is so technically sound that he can, I try to pass his guard and he can suck one of my legs out and he'll hook me. And you're talking about a guy who probably weighs as much as one of my legs.
Yeah, I think he's like just under 80 kilos.
So Bong's, you know, like he's just a demon, but technically like every move and his ability, and especially probably being a physio as well, like his ability to understand body mechanics and the way the body moves and like how to use my weight against me, it's actually really impressive. And I love rolling with that guy because of that. Like I love watching that. And it's not like I'm trying to fucking explode through him or anything like that. Like I'm very respectful with the size discrepancy, and I do like with you, like I try and play the more skillful game. But it's incredible to watch someone who is so technically sound, who is, you know, 50 kilos less than me in weight, be able to just manhandle me.
Yeah, and Bong's an example of someone who's really narrowed down on a particular skill set.
Yeah.
Like he's really narrowed down on guard play And he's decent at passing as well, but his guard, his open guard is his strength.
Yeah.
And he's really narrowed down on it. He's not tried to be like become well-rounded in a sense that he can wrestle and all that type of stuff.
For you, Clarkie, obviously, like you spend a lot of time in the gym. You take out Wednesday night, you know, competition rounds. Who's someone who's really, really stood out for you, say, over the last 12 months? Who's someone that you've seen, you know, who might have been pretty good but gone to an exceptional level, or gone from being quite new to the sport or new to the room and gone to an exceptional level?
I can think of two off the top of my head. So Bo, obviously.
Yep.
He's technically – his progression technically has been massive. Unfortunately, he's dealt with a lot of injury and type of stuff. Yeah. But, so he hasn't been able to compete to show it. But we – only yesterday – myself, Aiden, and Bo were doing just specific rounds. So I think specific rounds are a good way to see technical ability, because you're taking a lot of the physical aspect out of it, because you're starting in a specific position. A lot of physicality comes in the scrambles and all that, and when you do specific, you're kind of getting rid of those nothing positions that where physicality shines. And I think, you know, we're starting 50-50. And Bo's knowledge of the leg game, and that's improved so much over the last year. And then we started in open guard, and his passing, which was always pretty good, is insane, like loose passing and tight passing.
Yep.
And then his guard retention himself, I think, has been the biggest improvement I've seen. Like he's, so I'd say Bo, but he's put a lot of time in off the mats to get to that level. So. Mm-hmm. A lot of instructional time and that. And it'll be good to see if he can come back physically 100%. I think he'll do really, really well in competition. And then the other one, which is more of a surprising one, like everyone in the gym knows Bo's progressed heaps, but Lucas.
Mm.
So young Lucas, he's technically getting – he's improving so much. And we did see that – last year in his comp, he ran through everyone. He only just got his blue belt and then won a blue belt comp. I think he subbed everyone.
Yeah.
But since then, like he's only followed, I can see, and I remind him this all the time, is his gas tank. Like he dies at the end of rounds. But yeah. Physically, like technically in that, he's improved heaps, especially for someone who has, like he's only been a blue belt for not that long. So I think those two...
He does need to manage his output throughout the whole round. Like you know that first 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes is going to be rapid fire on him with leg entanglements and stuff like that.
Yeah, but he just has a knack for dying in the round, and he knows that, and I remind him of it all the time, and I'm sure he'll – it's something that's such an easy fix. Like you can improve your cardio in a few weeks. So yeah. I think having the technical ability is more important.
I've got two myself.
Yeah.
Reese.
Yeah.
Obviously now that he's not killing himself with dieting.
Yeah, yeah.
But like you watch him and Sandro, they're always discussing things. They're always working through scenarios, and you know, obviously I hold Sandro in a pretty high regard, much like yourself, especially as, you know, very dominant competitive purple belts. And we're going to see, you know, what Sandro can do on the subversion card this weekend. But for me, Reese has really, really stepped up. His ability to wrestle up, his leg entanglement game, his open guard is, you know, phenomenal. Passing phenomenal, and someone who, you know, I really, really have amazing back and forth rounds with, and really enjoy rolling with. Any feedback?
I think Reese is he is better than what he thinks
he is.
Yeah. So Reese is really, really good. He's been good for since he came to the gym.
Yeah.
You know, everyone knows Sandro is good. Sandro competes more in that, but Reese is up there as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if he knew how good he was, he would absolutely kill it in competition, I promise you.
Yeah.
So the reason I didn't say Reese is because I've thought he was – I think he's been good for ages.
Yeah.
Not that those other guys that I mentioned weren't good, but they've just had, a larger progression than –
think for me, like, because I don't get to spend a lot of time on the mats, you know, it'd be very rare that I'll be there at the same time as Reece. So, you know, I go long periods of time without rolling him.
Yeah.
So the vast improvement of the times that I've gotten to roll in with him recently, I'm just like, wow, man, you're really, really good. Really good. And the other one for me is Nate.
Oh, yeah, Nate, yeah.
The Asian Terminator just absolutely dominates. You know, you're trying to walk out the door with your bag on, he's asking you for a round.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that he's passing, getting to that crucifix is just, man, it's so streamlined and seamless. His guard is just, you know, it's really, really good. He's come such a long way.
Mate, that crucifix, if he gets you crucifix, it's so annoying.
It's a wrap. It's so annoying.
Or he gets that triangle thing.
Yeah, man. Like, it's just, and it's really cool to watch the evolution of a game. And he's got his own unique game, which is really cool. And you know it. So therefore, when you know that, like, it's really, you don't want to turtle with him. There's a lot of things where I do to maybe take a break or Granby back into the legs or something like that, where I can't play with him, because as soon as I go to turtle, he's looking to just suck that leg in and start looking for that crucifix and that arm in. I feel like his progression over the last 12 months has just been incredible, because he has a lot of mat time.
Yeah, for sure. He's mate, from when he first came, because he was a blue belt already, but yeah, there was a lot of holes in his game, but he's definitely progressed heaps. And he's another one that's like, you know, he's got a couple of kids. He's in his late 30s, like, and still just turns up every day. So I commend anyone doing that.
Yeah. And that's just like kind of the basis of our room. Like, I feel like anyone who puts in like even just a little bit of effort in our room, they seem to progress quite quickly, which then you see them as they progress, they become more and more inclined to spend more time on the mats, and they get that bug. But I guess we're just lucky, man. I guess, like, between the environment Lynch has created, then you have guys like Chad, you have guys like Bong, you know, our kind of, you know, black and brown belts, high belts, and then, like, you know, our kind of the senior purple belts, like between, say, Sandro and yourself, with coaching and, you know, competitive and being high level. And I think Bo will probably transition into one of them. Like, obviously he is an athlete, but sometimes when athletes do suffer, you know, some injuries along the way, it's, you know, if they can't do it, they tend to teach. And he's a very, very big ball of knowledge, Bo. Like, I could see him being a very good educator.
For sure, I go to Bo for heaps of technical advice, because he's staying up to date with everything, stuff that I don't watch anything or anything like that. Like, I watch matches and stuff, but I don't watch instructionals or anything. So,
but you're very good at, like, say, for instance, for me, like, I roll with you, I get really good round feedback from you in terms of like your ability and your knowledge of understanding jiu-jitsu and the technicality of it. Your ability to give me feedback makes me better, because it's very articulate.
Yeah.
Where guys like Sandro and Bo are so, like, they're just constantly consuming knowledge.
Yeah.
Plus they're always on the mats. Yeah. So obviously that, you know, I can see Bo being a really good addition to, like, Ronan as a coach as well.
Yeah. And I think the thing about Ronan is, like, it's only 3 years old. So a lot of what's happening there, people don't know about yet, because it takes time to build, like, a successful, you know, competitive gym, yeah. I think. Because you need the guys to be there for a while before they start really breaking new. Because we all came from, we're all from Nui in that. So before Ronan, there wasn't really like a competition team from Newcastle. Like, it's not like, you know, we've come from Marcelo Garcia Academy to the Blue Basement or something like that, where you're probably in a very competitive environment to begin with. You've just gone to a slightly
Or like an absolute to Sydney West.
Yeah, exactly. So I think these things, they're in the works, but they're going to take time. Like I think it'll be another couple of years and we'll start having guys, and I'm hoping to be one of them, but we'll start having guys competing at a more higher level than what we've seen so far.
And yeah, I think, with the trajectory that you're on, you're definitely going to be, you know, on a lot more subversions and stuff like that. Also, you know, as we said, you know, if we can keep Bo kind of injury free and out of car accidents and stuff, we'll be able to showcase his time and effort that he's putting into it as well. But also, like, I want to, like, obviously we've got subversion coming up. Man, I didn't realize Ali's doing Ramadan. Ash Williams, and you know, obviously, massive credit to Ash Williams. I said seen in the comments that you know, it's a big thing, like doing Ramadan, like, you know, looking forward to it. Super cool match. What's your thoughts on it?
I think it's cool in a sense. I think Ali's a good matchup for Ash just because he has the ability to wrestle at a high level. I think. If you give Ash a pure guard player or a leg locker or something, it just plays to his
strengths.
Yeah, because he's passing. He doesn't get leg locked really, and his passing is so good that if you give him a pure guard player, it's going to be tough.
Well, I think that's what Jeremy Skinner tried to do.
Jeremy tried to wrestle him.
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming just because of what we just talked about, Ash's guard is so good that if you play guard from the get-go, you're probably going to get passed or you're going to get fatigued for sure just because of the pressure and all that. Whereas it's still going to be a huge task for Ali because Ash is one of the you know, better guys in the world in that weight.
Yeah.
But I think giving him someone who has the ability to wrestle makes the match a little bit more interesting because Ash is obviously his best thing is his passing. And if he doesn't get to do that from the onset, I think it makes a more exciting match.
Yeah.
In that sense. But
anything else on that? Anyone else on that card matchup that you're looking forward to?
Well, I really wanted to see Baby Dave and Sousa just to see Because, I mean...
Sousa couldn't get a visa to get COVID or something?
No, he's in the country, still doing the seminars and that, but I think he was dealing with an injury.
Yep.
So I think he had to pull out of the match because he couldn't train in the lead-up.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but yeah, I wanted to see Dave versus Sousa, who's definitely one of the best in the world at 66.
Yep.
Just to see... It's good to see how the Aussie guys go. Dave versus Cole Abate not too long ago, and you know he lost, but it was a
competitive.
It was still a competitive match for most of it.
Also, being here in Australia too, I think a lot of our guys are always going overseas to compete. And as you know, the nutrition's not the same. Obviously, you've got air travel and fatigue. You're in a new environment, sometimes a new time zone. It's kind of nice to see, you know, these high level guys here in these rooms, like your Daves and your Curtis Martins and stuff like that, or Ali's, like here in our country where they get to sleep in their own bed. The dietary requirement hasn't really changed. The time zone hasn't changed. So it would have been really cool from that perspective to see Dave in his home city be able to, you know, take it to probably, you know, one of the best guys at that weight.
For sure. Yeah. It would have been, I was very looking really, really forward to that one. Having Fionn in Australia competing is pretty cool.
Fifi from the block.
Yeah. I mean, she's like, in terms of, she's up there. I'd say she's almost.
Goat status?
Pretty much. Yeah. Like, she's up there with Gordon in terms of no one really. I know I believe she lost to Elizabeth Clay not too long ago. But other than that, she's just been on an absolute tear. And I think having someone like that in Sydney is just awesome.
And on a card like Subversion, super cool for obviously Australian grappling.
Yeah.
One match I'm really looking forward to is Seb and Curtis.
Yeah, well, mate, I think they've versed each other like a million times because they're the two best guys in Sydney in that weight, probably, I'd say. So they have had a fair few matches, but it's always exciting because they both just go for the sub.
Yep.
And they both have very, you know, free-flowing games where they're not trying to edge out a victory ever. They're both absolute submission machines. So
if you had to pick a winner from that that match, who would you take?
Well, it's tough because I think Seb's had pneumonia recently. I know he competed last week on Grapple Mania, but I think the pneumonia thing, I think if he's still struggling with that, I think Curtis wins. I think if Seb comes in full healthy, he might, I think he'll get a decision just on closer submissions maybe.
Yeah.
But I think it could go either way, a match like that, because they're both just so free-flowing and they're both hunting submission that I don't think either of them's going to, you know, get a position and just ride out time or anything like that. So,
what about Sandro? What do you see Sandro's strengths are for his match?
Well, I've seen Cash compete quite a lot. He's very physical, very explosive. He's a great athlete. He's got a good base. His loose passing looks really good, getting to north-south and that. I think Sandro's more of a technician type of player, less explosive, less athletic, but very technically sound. I think if Sandro can get into a good position, I think he'll win.
Yeah.
So if he can consolidate a good position, whether it's a good submission position or it's a good point scoring position, even though there's no points, but you know what I mean, a dominant position, I think he's going to win.
Yeah.
I think the longer it spends open and in the scramble, it favours Cash.
Cash, so yeah, massively.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think very, very valid points. You know, I think if it comes down to being very technical on the floor, Sandro's he's a wizard, man. He's really, really good, kind of from everywhere. But yeah, similar. Like I think, you know, if it is scrambly and kind of wrestling dominant, then I think Cash does have the upper hand.
Yeah, for sure. But pulling for Sandro be huge if he gets this win.
Give the man the mic.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure he'll say something funny afterwards, which is good. Hopefully he doesn't dance though again. We could live without seeing Sandro dance ever again.
I feel like he's going to do that just to piss us off.
Maybe. But love Sandro.
No, he's absolutely killing
it. Amazing progress from him in the last, because he is actually like really good everywhere.
Yep.
Like there's not a weakness in his game technically.
No.
He's good top, bottom, wrestling, which is good. I think it's not always the best strategy to have competitive-wise to be good everywhere, because sometimes if you really just double down on one thing, you just get so elite at it that you can just do that one thing to everyone.
Yeah.
However, I think overall in terms of being a jiu-jitsu, you know, a jiu-jitsu guy, it's long-term, it's more beneficial.
Yeah, yeah, so. No, I agree. And I guess it's starting to get some foot traffic in the office.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We probably should look at something right. So anything else you wanted to touch on, Matthew? Any questions you had for me?
Pretty much. What's your – I want to know if you're going to compete this year. And if you can set, because I know previously you've said you wouldn't do it unless you can put all the time in and that. But as you were saying, could you maybe, because that's ego talking, you know what I mean? Like you don't want to do it unless you know you've put the hard thing in and you can, you know, you win. But could you put that aside and just put yourself in an uncomfortable position and compete? Even though you're just training as a hobbyist.
It's not so much about doing my best training to win. It's more so knowing that I did my best to put myself in that position. It's just – it's tough because I don't know what my weeks are like in terms of, you know, with pumping. Like you've got weather, you've got hydration that flows into it. Then, you know, being a dad, then I'm making excuses here. I know that.
I think this is what the question is. Could you compete?
Not this year. I don't see it this year because my my focus is on capitalizing on our renovation. Obviously, still building business. We're probably looking at getting pregnant at the end of the year. So my priorities just aren't with jiu-jitsu. When we move into town, and I've got more accessibility on short notice to get to the gym, be closer to yourself, then I will. But look, man, if I'm fit and something comes up and everyone's going, like, I will.
What I want to see. I want to see you just throw your hat in the ring. Maybe only train twice a week, but I think that's when you really test yourself. Like, it's easy to test yourself if you have the perfect lead up. I want to see you test yourself in a shit position. Like, okay, I haven't trained much. What am I made of?
Yeah, you know? But I feel like I do that in our room anyway. Because the thing is that I know that if I go and do that, and obviously, not that I get dominated, but like I get beaten, I know I could do better. I feel like it shifts my mindset from the renovations and my business, and it'll become about jiu-jitsu, which isn't going to give me any sort of return on investment for what I'm looking for at this stage of my life. I'm 40.
Yeah,
I'm looking to be retired in 10 years. Jiu-jitsu is not going to give me that.
No.
It's going to help me grow as a person. It's going to help me grow in a sport that I love, but it's not going to help my overall objective, which is to be financially free in 10 years.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But I'd love to see you, Newcastle Open, the big fella. Let's see it, mate. Let's get it. It's only up the road.
I'm not giving those cunts my money. I fucking hate them.
Newcastle Jiu-Jiteros?
I'll do a Jiu-Jiteros or something like that.
All right, George. George, sign him up now.
You just got to keep on to me with it.
I will.
Yeah.
I'm going to bully you until you turn up.
Is Jiu-Jiteros just weights? Is it belts or is it?
Yeah. Oh, they do like the beginner, intermediate, advanced.
Okay.
So.
What do I just go advanced and just go against Suppo and get hammered?
Well,
I'll do masters.
Maybe you ring Suppo and ask if he's making the trip.
He would make the trip just to beat the fuck out of me.
Maybe a late sign up there, Dallas. Because I don't want you to sign up, train twice a week, and then verse Suppo. I'm hoping you verse another 40-year-old, another 40-year-old dad.
How many are out there? Coley would have to be my only.
Well, you can do open weight and just. You know, you'll get a couple of like 90-kilo blokes, maybe 100-kilo bloke, and
yeah,
you know.
Oh, look, I don't have any doubt. Like the last time I did a jiu-jitsu comp, I won it. Like, I know I'm pretty competitive when it comes to actually like doing it, but I don't have any. Like, it doesn't help me in any way.
Yeah, but it's just a personal test, isn't it?
But I get a personal test every, like, I've just, you know, get my ass kicked by you.
I know. It's the next level of that.
That's not, but because you're giving me competition that is probably not going to be as good. If you can find another 40-year-old dude who's 100 kilos plus, who's a purple belt, then, like.
Maybe we get that.
Find him and I'll fucking smash him.
Maybe we get George, next aversion. To find your another you, and we just put yours at the start of the card. Battle of the 40-year-old big men.
I reckon that could be quite comical.
We'll make it a five minute match.
5 minute match.
Yeah, let's see the big fella just go at it.
Oof, oof. Yeah. Yeah. Oh look, man, I'm pretty, like, unless they're, you know, guys that compete all the time and they're kind of right, that like you know. There's no comparison. Like, of course they're going to win. Like, I'm just I'm the hobbyist at best. Yeah. But, like, you know, I get my humble pie from our room.
Yeah. I would just love to see have a go.
Why would you like to see that? Do you think there's something inside of me that will come out that you want to see?
I just think it's good for people to test themselves, you know? And I think not saying everyone should be a competitor or that, but it's the same reason I bully Nick into competing. He competes once every belt, pretty much. And I just...
Well, COVID destroyed my ability to compete at a blue belt.
Well, now you got to do it twice
and,
as a purple belt.
And injured.
But like Nick, so Nick is a, similar to yourself, he's no competitor, he's just a hobbyist. But
Nick's 23 years old.
He's 25.
I'm 40, dude.
But he goes against 20-year-olds that compete. So what I think it's good for everyone to every now and then get out of their comfort zone and compete.
But I get out of my comfort zone weekly, dude. You got to remember, like, I bought and started a business that I'd never ever worked in the industry before.
Mm.
And every time I go to a site, my setup's different, concrete's different. I get that challenge weekly from my business, literally.
Mm.
I like doing jiu-jitsu because I enjoy it. I enjoy the hang. I enjoy the camaraderie. I like getting a bit of a sweat on and being a little bit competitive. I don't need to go into a basketball stadium in some fucking random place in Sydney to test myself. I've got a two-year-old. I'm renovating a house and I've got a concrete and I've got a pumping business that I do on my own.
I think the justifications you're making makes me want to see you do it even more because you don't want to do it. And that's the point. That's the point I'm making.
But my weekends are for my family, Matthew. I don't want
weekend out of the year. Bring the family, mate.
Mate. Right, I'll do Newcastle.
Yeah, Newcastle.
You're a bully.
That's what I'm saying. You don't have to come to Sydney. Newcastle, you can rock up just before you start time and you can leave straight after.
Mate, that you know that's never going to happen. Rock up before you start time. I'll get there at my start time and 2 hours later the match will happen. Yeah. Or no one will come.
Well,
and then I'll have to fight supper.
Come on, supper. Just don't. Just leave Newey alone,
mate. When I went down to pick up my car, which was down the Nissan down the road from Sydney West, and I was supposed to train with the boys, but I got fucking stuck. Anyway, long story. So I get there with like 5 minutes left in the session, and I roll in, and I've got jean shorts on and a shirt and stuff. I goes, get those fucking jorts off and get on the mats. I was like, with that aggression, I'm not coming anywhere near these mats.
Yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately you'd get thrown to him straight away because, again, probably the only guy the same size as you.
Yeah, but the technical difference is fucking crazy.
I know, and yeah.
It's not even the same realm, let alone our age gap difference. Like, he's the best heavyweight to ever come from Australia and – you know, as Grace has said, there is a good chance, man, that Suppo could be a medalist in the world on the biggest stage. Like, there's a good possibility that's going to happen.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
So I'm happy to sit at a podcast table with that guy.
The problem is it's hard to gauge because he doesn't get to verse the
It's not only that, but Matthew, I think, you know, what we said before. Where is it this year? Is it in Vegas again?
I believe so.
Okay. So again, it's like, you know, you fly in, you know, different diets. Like, man, like my first week or two in America, I always just have the runs. Yeah. Like even though you eat at Whole Foods or whatever else, the food's different, man. Their grains are different. Like their coffee's different. Their milk's different. Like
if you get the, unfortunately coming from Australia, we get the one seed or the two seed.
You're getting Tanner or Gordon.
It's tough to gauge where people are at sometimes from those parts of the world because
I want to see Josh versus Nicky Rod. Either the boys from Subversion need to spend some money and get Nicky Rod out here.
Oh, mate, imagine that.
Come and do a Nicky Rod. Come and do a seminar.
You got to give him the seminar tour. That's how you get him here.
Can we work on that? I will work on that. Let's get Nicky Rod out here. And I want to see Nicky Rod and Josh Saunders headline Subversion. Bigger mat, please, guys. Bigger mat.
That'd be the biggest match in Australia for sure.
And then Nicky Rod, J-Rod, just doing an East Coast tour.
Who's versus J-Rod? That'd be cool too.
Seb? Too big. Seb too big?
J-Rod's about, I think he's about 85 kilos. About my size.
Isaac Michelle.
Yeah. I think Isaac would beat him, but. For sure.
Great match.
It's a sick match.
Well,
yeah.
You know, Isaac, you know, he represents Sydney West. So that'd be cool to see Isaac back here doing that stuff.
And then Ethan and Baby Dave or something.
fire.
George, we're doing your job for you, mate. Yeah. You made this happen.
Let's go. The B team versus Sydney West.
Oh, yeah. But we got no one. Who's going to verse Craig, but?
Craig's in the Ukraine snorting fucking gunpowder. Craig's a myth now to jiu-jitsu.
But that'd be amazing if that could.
B team versus Sydney West Martial Arts.
And then B team do a seminar tour, because realistically that's how you get them here. That's how you can pay them enough, because you're not going to pay them enough. Mate,
they
just show up.
They could literally make enough money just to do the east coast of Australia.
Well, they would just fill every single room.
So. Every single room, dude.
And like, you look at the Fion and the Gab Souza one. I think it's about $150 to all of them. But I guarantee you they're filling all of them.
100% they are.
Because we just, you know, people.
Well, you could even run like, you could say you could run almost like a 3-day seminar where you go Nicky Rod the first day, maybe Creliston the second day, and then J Rod the third day. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You could do like the wrestling up or hand fighting, then Ethan's back, and then J Rod could do buggy. You know what I mean? That's 3 days.
Yeah, I think they'll be limited to what gyms they could go to though, because a lot of them don't have the size to
facilitate it.
You need a space where you can get, you know, triple figures people in there and still be able to.
Mate, Newcastle basketball.
Imagine they're at the PCYC, mate.
just TEM Concrete and Thompson and Clark bring the B team out to Australia.
Oh, shit. Imagine that. Nah, let's, George, you do it. It sounds like hard work. I know you got to house them and shit. I can't be bothered.
Oh, fuck. Well,
that would be amazing though.
Well, we're giving you something, George. George, Matt, Grayso, B team versus Sydney West.
And I'm not J-Rod even going
to. Nicky Rod versus Suppo, Isaac Michelle versus J-Rod, Ethan Creliston versus Baby Dave. Make that happen.
I'm in.
And
I'm
you're in. Welcome.
I'm sure he's thought of this as well. I'm sure he's thought of something like this. There's no way he hasn't.
Yeah, I'm sure. But like, just make it happen. No, I'm just,
come on, George. Yeah. Pull your finger out, mate. Now, but very exciting. Subversion this weekend. Everybody watch on Flow Grappling. Get yourself a subscription. You got to pay the year up front. It sucks.
It sucks. Or like... The best boat you can own is a friend. Find a friend who's got
a Flow Grappling,
a Flow Grappling account, and go and watch it with
them. Go to your friend's house.
I'll be probably at Chad's.
Yeah, I'm going to Nick's. Yeah. So, you know, everyone should watch it and just get Flow Grappling, because there'll be multiple subversions this year. You don't want to miss them. It's really good for Australian grappling. So
yeah, and look, you know, if you can just lean on a friend, but get around them. The boys do a sensational job. I said George should become a silent partner in all facets of the word. No, I'm just joking. I think Grayso should be the spokesman for Subversion. I think he's a great communicator. So I want to see the Moose take control there. But yeah, Matt, departing words, what's happening?
I've got no departing words of wisdom other than watch Subversion tomorrow, Saturday, April 6th, is it? Yeah, April 6th. And huge shout out to the Italian stallion, Sandro Perillo, representing Ronan. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck to big Sandro. You know, obviously I started the podcast on a pretty serious note. Do want to close with that. You know, make sure you're looking after your friends and, you know, go deep if you see things that are out of the ordinary and uncharacteristic. You know, really dive down on them. You know, you don't want to fucking lose anyone. Look, obviously I love doing this podcast with you, Matthew. Thank you for making me a better person. Thank you for making me want to be a better person.
It's awesome. Gives us something to look forward to every month.
Every month, friend. Man. Yeah. And look, guys, if you have anything that you want us to touch on or talk about, something that might be happening at your gym, or have you got something that could relate to on the mats with the bloodstained Nikes where someone's copped a big whack on the mats, or something you want to promote, send it through to us and we'll talk about it on the show.
Yep. And remember, CMBT Nutrition, protein bars, amazing. I've got one here. My favorite is the salted caramel.
Guys, yeah, CMBT doing amazing things all across the mixed martial arts world. TTP 10 for 10% off at checkout. Get around CMBT and fuel your passion. Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you, sir.
Cheers. Listening legends, make sure you like and subscribe on all your podcasting platforms and head over to Instagram and check us out at @to_the_point_podcast. To the point. To the point.